Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another night of Spiritual Connections Radio. Of course, that's what we coined all the different shows we have on, but we specifically were the first show. So I'd like to welcome everybody on the air. As always, we are on every Thursday from 9:30 to 10:30 Eastern Standard Time. And if you miss any part of the show, you can go back to the archives, and all the shows are in the archives. So you can go back and replay them. You can download them in MP3. You can list them. You know, you can look at them on iTunes and all that great stuff. So the website, of course, is spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And if you are looking at some of the different services I have, you can find my website at markarawson.com. That's M-A-R-K-A-R-A-W-S-O-N. And with that, I'm going to introduce my host, Pam. Pam, are you there?
I am. Good evening, everyone. It's nice to be here on Thursday night.
Excellent.
And we have a very special show for you tonight. I know this because I have interviewed this man before. He is an amazing healer, shaman, let's quote him, certified master practitioner of energy medicine, lovely, very impressive, and recognized shamanic healer in the United States and abroad for children and adults. So let's get right to it. There's so many things that I want to talk to him about. Carrie, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hello. Thank you. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You're so welcome. Everyone, this is Carrie Stokes. Nice to meet you, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's great having you on, Carrie. I know we've had Carrie on in the past, and he's talked about a lot of his different work, and you know, I know Carrie just came back from one of his journeys, and I said, you know, it'd be really great to just have a show that talks about a lot of the great places that I have not been yet that I want to go to. And Carrie, I'm sure, has a lot to cover this evening talking about that, and more importantly, talking about how he was freezing his butt off on his last trip.
We're at some high elevation in Peru, yeah.
So why don't you start by just telling us, you know, when did you get back, and, you know, what were you doing, and what does that journey look like, and why do people do it, and, you know, just take it from there.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you. Yeah, every summer I go. I've been working with the Andean, the Caro. They're the Caro Nation. They're a small village of 500 or maybe a little bit better. And they are the medicine men and women, the Pacos, they call them, of the Andes. And their village is up around 14,000 feet and above. There's several little pockets of villages in one particular area. And anyway, I've been training with them for the past maybe going on close to a decade now. And every summer I go over there for, I lead groups. I was going myself, my own personal journeys, and then working for a company, and I was leading their kids' trips over there and helping with their adults' journeys. And then I started taking my own groups over there, and I go every year for that to have, you know, hopefully to share that experience with other people. The experience that I've had that was very life transforming, and then also to just continue to kind of deepen my practice and just kind of recharge my batteries from, you know, doing all the work here, particularly in the United States. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful journey. We sit in ancient sites and do ceremonies and receive ancient initiation rites, which is a series of initiation rites you go through in a process over the time. Typically, we're there from about 12 days and sometimes a little longer. This year I stayed, the group was 12 days, and I took a four-day personal journey up to Asangate Mountain, which is the sacred feminine mountain in that area. The masculine is called Sulkantai, and there's other wakas, they call them wakas or power points over there as well. And that's the point where I was really. In the Sacred Valley, it's nice, the weather is nice in the day, it gets warm, and then it gets cool at night, but up at Asangate we were above 15,000 feet, and it was freezing. Like, my water bottle in the tent in the morning was rock solid. So I knew what it felt like to be an ice cube.
Wow.
But, that's incredible.
Yeah, it was a beautiful trip. And nobody was up there, of course. It was very, you know, it was just myself. A friend of mine came with this year, a guy named John, who's in medicine wheel training with. We became friends over time. My wife and his wife knew each other, and so he came along. And then we just had the cook with us, and then one medicine person, one shaman, and then we had a horseman, of course, because you kind of take the horses in with a heavy load, and you're carrying your backpack, which is, you know, depending on what you're carrying, it's somewhat heavy. You know, 20, 30, 40 pounds, whatever you're carrying in there. And it was a really special trip. I call on that mountain energetically. You know, they call them the Apus, or the mountains, the Apus, Apakunas. They call the spirits of these mountains. And I work with that spirit of that mountain quite a bit. So I felt this year I really wanted to go and make a personal pilgrimage and, you know, offering to that mountain and just kind of a honoring to that mountain, because, you know, I work with a lot in my own personal work and working with clients. And it was something that's been on my calendar for a couple of years now, so I'm glad I actually got that done. It was really beautiful. As a matter of fact, one morning I got up and I actually found a meteorite up there. And Peru is full of meteorites in the markets. You go in the marketplaces in the Sacred Valley and you'll see meteorites, but it's the first time I've ever found my own up there, and it was really special for me, because it was a wee early morning hours when the sun was just coming up, and I was kind of walking around. Everything was frozen. The lake was frozen. The ground was frozen. And I was kind of speaking to the mountain, and I turned around, looked down. There was this meteorite. So now I have it in my mesa, in my medicine bundle, and I'll definitely cherish that for a long time as a special gift.
That's great. Tell me something, Terry. You brought up a lot of places and a lot of the things that you've been doing, and unfortunately most of us have not been there, so I'd like to clarify it in my mind and hopefully in the mind of our listeners. As now, the valley, the Sacred Valley of Machu Picchu, journey of Peru, is that what you're talking about? Is that where you were?
Yes, the Sacred Valley. Yeah, you typically fly into Lima. It's a big city, and then from Lima you take a little small plane, maybe about an hour, and you go into the town of Cusco, city of Cusco, beautiful city there. Actually, more, you know, Lima's like kind of like Manhattan, New York, and Cusco would be maybe like Chicago, maybe less, smaller than that, but a beautiful little city. And you fly in there, you're about 11,500 at elevation there, and then we go down into what's called the Sacred Valley, which is an area of either Pisac or Urubamba is kind of the main couple towns down there, and you kind of go down in elevation. And typically we base out of a really beautiful, we stay in really nice, I don't know if you want to call them hotels, or not like hotels we know them in the United States, but like little casitas, if you will, you know, really beautiful adobe-type places. You have all the amenities, you know, really nice restaurant there, and you know, water and heat. Well, you don't have a heater necessarily, but, you know, warm blankets, a nice bed and all that. So we stay in that valley, and then from there every day we journey out. So in the morning, we'd get up in the morning, have breakfast, and then we'd head out to an ancient site, whether it's Morai, or Ollantaytambo, or these sites that are down in that area. And Machu Picchu is one of them. But typically, for Machu Picchu, you have to take a train from that town. Ollantaytambo is an ancient site. It's an ancient, used to be a fortress, if you will, and had other storage units. And some are, parts of it are even pre-Incan, which are date back to the Wari. And the Wari, which is W-A-R-I, Wari is the culture that was similar to, I guess, or somewhat similar to the Incan, but they were pre-Incan. So some of these sites date back even that, you know, that far back. You can tell from the structure and the way the stonework is and things like that. And some of them you can see there's some damage because when the Spanish came over to and conquered Peru, you know, they were all looking for gold and silver. So some of these sites, you see this beautiful architecture, but then some of it was damaged because the Spanish, you know, thought, well, let me break this open. Maybe there's a gold and silver in here, and there wasn't. You know, the Incans knew that, you know, gold and silver had no value. They used it for decoration. You know, to them, everything that had value was, you know, corn and potatoes and water and things of the earth. You know, they were great, great stewards of the earth.
Lovely. So why is it, if you don't mind me asking, why do you go there how do you go every summer?
Every summer I go, yeah. Well, I like to take groups because I like to give them a true, authentic experience. I also take trips out to South Dakota now that we work with Lakota Wisdom Keepers out there. And I've always had a passion for working with indigenous cultures, and I want to give people a true experience. Not, you know, it's not a touristy type. I mean, there's some tourism in it. Of course, we have a guide with us that gives some history and things like that, but we also steep ourselves in ceremony and these rites, and it's actually kind of a nice blend. So it's you receive some, you do some ceremony, you receive your rites, you enjoy the beauty of the site. We also have a guide to give some history there, so you kind of get a nice, and then you have free time on your own, so you're not like, you know, sometimes people call me, and it's not like you're all day in ceremony and you're all day stuck here. You have it's really nice, a blend. And people become a nice family, what they call an IU or a tribe. You know, we become a family during that time, and people get really close, and you're sharing some, you know, really sacred time together, you know. And again, you have your own free time to journey off and explore the site on your own and meditate and things like that. So you know, I guess I kind of, you know, did it somewhat how it was exposed to me, and also took it a little further where how I would want a trip where I'm getting a little of all this. You know, you're getting some sustenance and ceremony and spirituality, if you will, but then you're also having, you know, learn that it's just so beautiful over there. It's very peaceful, and the people are just super sweet, and the food is really, really fresh, comes right out of the earth. I mean, you're eating quinoa and corn. It's just really amazing. It's just a really amazing experience. It's one of those things that you can talk about until you actually go, then you go, oh, you know what, this is, you know, it's like taking a photograph of something really beautiful. You go, well, here it is, but if you were there, it's even so much more than this photograph. So it's kind of like that.
Beautiful. So you go once a year, and you do sort of spiritual enlightenment tours, is what I'm getting. Is that how you describe it?
Yeah, well, it's people's own direct revelation. I just feel like I'm holding that container myself, and this, you know, we have a driver and a guide and the shaman, and we put a lot of you know, prayer and energy in it prior to even anybody even registering. And you know, I feel my responsibility, or our responsibility, those involved in the group. I mean, basically, I'm leading the group, if you will, but is to hold that sacred container for people to, you know, have their own direct revelation. And I feel the same way about any kind of workshop or class. Is really, it's about, you know, we all could go on the same trip and have certain, you know, different experiences, and it's really that really personal aspect, and that those things that make a deep shift. And the shamans there and the rites that you're receiving, they're working in your luminous energy field. You know, you got to remember, these rites have been passed down for thousands of years. It's not something that's new. I mean, this has been traditionally done, grandfather to grandson, grandmother to granddaughter, and passed down through generations. And you know, years ago, it used to be you couldn't receive all these rites like this one after the other. You would receive a rite, or what they call a karpai, which is a Quechua is the language in the high Andes. Basically, in that town in Cusco, and it's Spanish. But in the high mountains, you find they speak Quechua, which is a really beautiful language. And the word they use is carpi for rite or initiation. And it would be a long time, years, before you receive a second initiation. But because of the times that we're in and the times that are among us and have been, you know, with everything that's approached to 2012 and beyond, things are moving a lot faster. And these Quero, some of the history behind that is in like the 1500s when the Spanish came to conquer Peru, these medicine people took off to the high mountains. They took off to, you know, levels that were so, you know, that nobody, the Spanish weren't chasing them after, you know, to learn about their processes and their prophecy, if you will. They were after the gold, so they let them be. So they stayed in this village even till today. It's pretty, you know, remote and protected. And they came down sometime in the 1940s, late 40s, to bring their medicine to the world. Spirit, you know, basically told them, hey, listen, this has to get out to the West because it's us in the West that are the masses, not a little village of 500, that we're going to create change. But thank God people like these Quero held this body of prophecy and also body of processes, and the processes are the rites, the initiations, and they're the true caretakers of the earth, stewards of the earth and of creation, and they really kind of live in that place. And I think it's really important for future generations, you know, that this kind of gets out there. And it's also part of the passion, I guess, of my what I do is to expose people to that. And hopefully, you know, as we heal individually, then we heal in our families, then the community, and then out into the world. Because I realize, you know, I only have so much time on this earth walk, and then, you know, then I go to the spirit world, right? We all take that walk. And it's important to me. I realize the legacy that I'll leave behind for my, hopefully my son and his children and those children, his, you know, children's children. So that's kind of like a bigger view of it.
Absolutely. Tell me something. What do you think makes a site sacred? I know that there's a simple answer, but I'd like you to tell us what makes a site sacred in your eyes.
Well, anywhere can be sacred. You know, right in my living room, I consider sacred. Right at my altar, or you know, really everywhere you are, I guess could, you know, if you look at it that way, it's sacred. But some of these PowerPoints, they call them awakas, or energy vortexes or power points, you know, and it's a place where people have been coming and doing ceremony and, you know, for years after years and thousands of years, and some of them hold these ley lines in the earth and also have just these energy power points. I don't know if that's answering your question as far as, you know, it's kind of maybe going beyond sacred, because anything and everywhere, I guess, is sacred, right? But these going to these sites are more like, you know, power centers, you know. So you're sitting in places where, you know, these ceremonies have been gone on for thousands of years. And it's, again, it's one of those things where I'm sure you can call up something where you've been someplace and it's just hard to put into words, but you feel the energy there. You feel the spirit. You feel the spirit of the mountains. You know, they pray for these mountains, and they pray so much all the time, and I truly believe it makes a big difference. You know, there's one gentleman I know over there for one particular mountain. That's all his job is if you look at his job, I guess, is that he just constantly does ceremony and honoring and prayers, you know, for the mountain and for the land. And they still, it's kind of third world country over there, so they still till the land like they did thousands of years ago with oxen and you know, they have some tractors, but not like we have here. You know, it's like a luxury over there. Most of them are still tilling the land with, you know, oxen and, you know, like holding with the reins and pulling an oxen and with a big blade, and they're tilling the earth this way. And I think it's really, I don't know, it's kind of like a little bit standing back in time, if you will, you know. So it's, they really honor the earth, and they don't just, you know, once they've harvested a certain area, they move on to another area and allow the earth to regenerate, and they're very conscious about that. You know, it's kind of a, something we've kind of lost in the Western world, but I do believe a lot of us, as you know, you interview a lot of guests, and you guys are doing beautiful work in what you're doing, each one of you. So, you know, it's everybody kind of, you know, waking up to this and collectively making a difference. You know, it's not about us and them anymore. Or, hey, you're doing this work, I'm doing that work. It's all, everything is together for the betterment of the whole, which is the Mother Earth, creation, and life. And, you know, we don't have clean air, clean water, clean food, you know, we're not going to be around very long, you know.
Sure. Let me ask you a question about the mountain energy, because that's fascinating to me. I have some shaman background, and I live on a lake with beautiful trees around the lake. And I run into periods in my life where I'll be sitting out on the dock, and I'll suddenly feel like I was almost like I jumped off into the water, but I didn't. This is all just happening in my mind's eye. And the energy, and it's like I feel like I'm swimming at the bottom of the lake and I'm touching the animals. But like the lake is so alive in me, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. Is that what it feels like with the mountain? Is it that kind of energy that you're talking about?
Well, yeah, they have actually up there at Asangati Mountain, there's a lake. One's called Rainbow Lake. The other's called Jaguar Lake. And the other is the Jaguar Nuestra. So they have the masculine and the feminine. A lot of things, everything they do there is in balance with the masculine and the feminine. So we did ceremony at Jaguar Lake. At the masculine, we went and did a cleansing, a cleaning of the energy field and pulling any kind of heavy energy or even things that are something we might be holding or something that might have been spoken upon us or anything, any kind of negative. They're working to always, you know, be in a clean state, you know, before you receive, you know, the rites, you know, before we did the spacho. The spacho ceremony is very typical. They do before you receive the rites. So what a despacho is, I think it's actually truly translated in Spanish as offering. You know, despacho is a offering. So what you're doing is basically they start out with a white sheet of paper and they start to take different elements of the earth and they start to, of course, coca leaves are very prominent over there because that sustains them in the high Andes. You know, they're chewing coca leaves over there not to, you know, get a buzz from it or anything. What it does is it actually curbs the appetite when they don't have food. And it also helps you with altitude, you know, because if you've ever been in high altitude, you can get altitude sickness, which if you're not hydrated enough or just the altitude itself can give you a headache and things like that. And chewing coca leaves alleviates that. So they make offerings, and it's almost like creating a mandala, and they start to build on it and build on it. And it's a beautiful, beautiful prayer offering, and with flowers and all different things, condor feathers they, you know, put in there, and all different coca leaves and things they put in there. And it's an offering to the earth, to the Pachamama. It's an offering to the mountains, to the Apus, because, you know, that's where they live, you know, everything that sustains them there. You know, some altitudes, all they can grow is potatoes. You know, then it's not like you have a grocery store and they have, you know, we have all these modern conveniences. What I tell people, you know, these shamans are not just medicine people. They're the midwives. You know, they bring in births of babies. They help people cross over when they leave this world. They work with, you know, people in their relationships, if they will, or anything personal that's going on for them, for healing, whatever they need. So they play a lot of role. They're storytellers and you know, their wives are great master weavers of textiles, and you know, when you're up at that altitude, there's, like, say there's not a Walgreens or a Publix, or I don't know what you have where you guys are, but, you know, basically a grocery store medicine, yeah, with medicines and things like that. You know, they have to create all that, you know, they have to create all that from what's there. So So they do these offerings ahead of time, and it's always like that. I mean, the reason for that is that you're not receiving something without giving something. It's what they call, the main principle in Peru is what they call Aini. And Aini is A-Y-N-I. And Aini means right relationship. You know, so you always want to be in right relationship. You know, you help me today, I'll help you tomorrow. It's never like, oh, good, look what happened for, you know, I got this for me and nothing for you. You know, it's always a give and take. And it's a beautiful, beautiful way to live. You know, even when you come to the, you go to the market and you buy a certain amount of things, and if you bought a lot of things maybe from one market, the market person will turn around and hand you a gift back. You know, and you never get that in our stores. We're used to going in and buying something and leaving, you know. And but they'll say, oh, you know, thank you for, you know, purchasing so many things, and they'll kind of hand you a gift back. And it's a way of Aini, because you've just, you know, helped to support their family. So it's, I guess because it's kind of a little bit third worldish over there, but it's really beautiful. I mean, not just physically beautiful, but the energy there is really, really pure. And I don't feel like there's any deviant energy over there, any kind of really, you know, it just seems really pure and clean, and the life's pace is really slow. Even people are driving slow, and just know you're going to get there when you get there. It's no rushing around. It's just, I just love it. I mean, I'll probably retire there, at least go there more in the summers for longer time periods, I'm sure, but. I mean, I'd invite anybody if they want to go on our trips to come for sure, but even if you don't come on our trips, I always tell people just get over there, just make your way over there. And not to Lima, to Cusco, the Sacred Valley, which does include Machu Picchu, which you mentioned.
It does include Machu Picchu?
Well, from the Sacred Valley, you have to take a train. You take from Ollantaytambo, which is that one site, you take a train about an hour and a half, and you actually go down in altitude. Some people think you're going up, but you're actually going down. You're going closer towards the jungle. And then you get off there and you stay in a town. We overnight in a town called Aguas Calientes, which is a beautiful town. We have a, we sleep on a little hotel right on the river. There's a rushing river. You open your door and you just hear the water rushing, you know, through there. It puts me to sleep like instantly, but it's really a beautiful place. And then we, you know, go to Machu Picchu. Sometimes we go in the morning, or sometimes we go in the afternoon. This last year we did the sunrise there at Machu Picchu, and I think I'm going to start doing that more often, because it was really, you got to get up, you know, real early. It's still dark out, 5 a.m., but you take the bus up there, and you're up there by 6:30, and, I mean, it's only a 15-minute ride, so it's really not that long. So, say 5:30, you're up there by 6, and you're, you know, just a handful of people in there, and you're watching the sun come up over the mountains and start shining the light down on Machu Picchu. I mean, it's kind of beyond, again, one of those things beyond words. I mean, you just, there's little swallows that, you know, flying back and forth in front of you, and it's beautiful. It's really fantastic. And plus you're gathering
hey,
all the energy there, you know.
Hey, Carrie.
Yeah.
You know, since you've done this trip a number of times, what do you think is the one thing that surprises you when you go each time?
Good question. One thing that surprises me, well, I guess how, even though it's, repetitive, like it doesn't feel, I never feel like, you know, bored, like, oh, I've done this before, you know, kind of thing. It's still, even some of the people this trip were asking me, like, is this first time you've done this? I was like, no, because I get as excited as they do. I really look forward to getting up there and absorbing that energy, and I always love to spend time meditating in those kind of places, whether Machu Picchu or, you know, even some of the other sites, you know. It's just really, really fantastic. And the beauty, this year we had the most, probably, it was the most auspicious as far as in the way we had every site. We had hawks. I mean, every once in a while I'd see one, but every day we had either one or two hawks and condors. And typically you don't see condors that often, but we saw them almost in every single site. And in one site, in particular, these two condors came by during the ceremony. They flew once by, you know, left to right, then they came back 10 minutes later the other way, and then one more time. And as we were doing the ceremony, once we were done, they stopped, and it was no, to me, and everybody else felt the same way, that they truly were giving us a show, like they were flying, you know, back and forth, and then they stopped, and they flew right in the middle, right over top of us, probably for... And it was a male and a female, which I also thought was very interesting, you know, that masculine and feminine balance. And they were probably 20 minutes. They did a show for us just flying across the mountaintops you know, it was just beautiful to watch.
Let me just take a quick break. If you're just tuning in now, you're listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. We're on every Thursday from 9:30 to 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, me and Pam Latour. Pam, just for a second, let's pause here. What did you talk about your radio show for a second, Pam?
Well, thank you. I have a radio station, a new one called PamelaLatourRadio.com, and we have several shows going. This next week, we have a show on Tuesday night called Full Traveler, done by hypnotherapist Dr. Patricia McGivern and myself on the path of the soul through lifetime after lifetime. Then on Wednesday night, there's Secrets of the Soul, which is my radio show that used to be on Spiritual Connections. That show was supposed to start last month, but Blog Talk was having difficulty. So it'll start Wednesday night for the first night. Thursday night, or Thursday morning, actually, Thursday night I'm on the show with Mark every Thursday night at 9:30 on Spiritual Connections. But in the mornings, every Thursday morning at 9 o'clock, we do a show called Insights and Umbrellas with Dr. Kelly Brady about current events, different issues that are happening in the world, and she looks at it from a psychotherapy perspective, and I look at it from a quantum field perspective, and it ends up being a funny, interesting, insightful show. So right now, those are just a few of the shows that are on the list of things that we're offering. And of course, again, Thursday nights at 9:30, we're on Spiritual Connections Radio. You can find all this list of shows on PamelaLatourRadio.com. And thank you, Mark.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you, Pam. Yeah, we're really excited about all the great projects and everything that Pam has been working on. And I just I have so much gratitude to be able to work with her and just see all the things that are happening. Hey, Carrie, why don't you go ahead and give out your website?
Well, my website is simply and I had a really good guy work on it that you know really well. Actually, it was Mark. He did a great job with it. It's just CareyStokes.com, CareyStokes, CareyStokes, CareyStokes.com, and everything's on there. It's constantly being kind of updated. I just brought back a lot of things I got to put on there, items as far as I brought back a bunch of Palo Santo, the sacred wood from the jungle there that's really hard to find. I brought that and some rattles and some textiles and even some jewelry. It's, you know, people have been asking me when I, you know, come back to bring more things. So we're starting to do that now. So, and you can get spirit water and other, you know, shamanic tools, if you will, on there. And then there's other things about workshops and retreats and like that.
Excellent.
So thank you. Yeah, you can call anytime they can do. And there should be a phone number on there, which is 954-907-3006. Again, 907-3006 with a 954 area code. If anybody ever wants to call, has a question, I'm always available, unless I'm traveling.
Okay. All right, excellent. Well, before we get back into our questions about the journey and some of the other work that you do, you know, in different parts of the country, Can you talk a little bit about some of the stuff that you're working on with your wife? I know she does absolutely incredible work, and I know you guys collaborate, and I really love that because I think both of you are really good role models as a spiritual couple. And I find a lot of inspiration there, and I think there's actually a angel guided spiritual partnership type of thing you guys do together. So why don't you go ahead and talk about some of the project work you guys are doing?
Yeah, so we do some things to individually and together. Like she's doing this coming up September 14th, and her website's angelhealingwings.com. She has a class being a certified angel channel reader. That's something specifically that she's trademarked and worked on, you know, about working with your angels and how to connect more, you know, intuitively and channeling and things like that. And typically before that class, we'll offer just a free healing, which actually we got a great testimony. Of course, it's not us doing the healing. It's always spirit doing the healing. We're just facilitating. But a woman had throat cancer and was totally cured. She sent us an email just a couple nights ago.
Wow.
So that was really amazing to hear. And we've heard other stories like that. A gal came to Peru a couple years back, had a tumor. I didn't know she did, and she didn't tell anybody. And then the next time we saw her, she said, oh, that was one of the reasons she went on the trip, and that was totally healed as well. So, you know, these, you know, spirit's always there. I think healing's always able to happen. And, again, we just kind of facilitate, get out of the way, and hopefully those kind of, you know, I like to hear more stories like that. So we collaborate on some things that way. We do a mediumship road trip. I think there's something coming up in October on that where we go together and we do a trip to Elsa, she's funny. She likes going to these kind of, I don't want to say haunted, if you will, but spirit spirit-filled hotels or sites. She likes to go in there and like Ghost Hunter or something, you know, but it's kind of fun. So we do mediumship classes there, and there's other kind of improv. Sometimes she'll just get a message saying, hey, we're going to do this class on this, and I just kind of learn to go with the ride, you know. Typically, she's kind of working more in the angelic type of realm. I'm working more in kind of earth, you know, energy medicine, if you will. But, of course, it's all intertwined. There's no separation. I mean, when I'm certainly calling on, you know, angels and guides and those from the other side to work with. And she's certainly calling on the earth medicine and things like that. But typically, she's kind of more into that and I'm more into the other. And together it makes a nice kind of yin and yang, if you will, good balance.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, I think it was about 3 years ago that I met both of you when we were doing senior mediumship training with John Holland up in Maine.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, it was a good gift.
Yeah.
I'm glad we had a nice friendship over the years. I appreciate it. I'm glad we went to that class.
Mm. So, okay, Pam, let's jump in and figure out where we're definitely kind of cruising through a lot of the – I know we have tons of questions. We could probably go for hours tonight, so –
Well, let's start by backing up just a little bit because, Carrie, you were talking about the despacho ceremony, and I wanted to ask you why exactly they do a despacho ceremony. I almost said despacho. It's despacho.
Yeah, it's despacho. It's D-E-S and P-A-C-H-O.
Right.
Yeah, despacho. Yeah, that's it's always a giving before you're receiving. So you're setting up to receive initiation rites. So you're always, he's calling in the spirits, you're bringing in the spirits. I'm actually going to be teaching a class on this here in Florida, and I'm looking to bring more things actually online. People have been asking me that they can't get here from other parts of the country. So I'm looking to bring more of a 10 or 12-week, you know, course where people can download things and or, you know, participate via, you know, the internet somehow. And but anyway, this class is, I brought a typical despacho from Peru. Now, you can't bring in coca leaves anymore from Peru. And here we use bay leaves. So, again, it's the intention. It doesn't mean that coca leaves are more powerful than bay leaves. Is they use coca leaves because that is what they've always used, and that's what they have in the high Andes. And that's something they use medicinally. They use coca leaves, and they also use it, like I said, for altitude. You'll see them constantly chewing it. As soon as you come into one of these sites and we sit down in a circle, they'll bring out coca leaves. They typically three together is called a quintu, and that quintu is then you take that and you fold that up and you say an offering, a prayer to the location that you're in to make that connection, and then you put those coca leaves into your, you know, either left or right side of your mouth, depending, and you can either just leave them there or chew on them, and it's to make a connection. Now, I always tell people if you're not comfortable with that, then you just take them and say a prayer and, you know, stick it under a rock or, you know, make a little, lift up the ground a little bit and make that connection. That way you don't have to chew the coca leaves. You know, the shamans chew them like in the bags full, you know, but it's making that connection. So the despacho is, to answer your question, is you're preparing an offering to the earth, to the mountains, to the spirits, you know, to Creator, to everything, you know, before you're going to receive one of these ancient rites. And what they do after that despacho, which is very interesting, they fold it up, they bundle it up, and it looks like the paper. They start out with white, but underneath that, also on the other side, is almost like a decorative paper, either with roses or flowers or something very beautiful. And they and they, when they're done with it, they fold it all up, and then they wrap it up into a mesa cloth or a despacho cloth, which is basically just a textile that they use, has different weavings in it. And then from there, they clean your luminous energy field. So with all those prayers and everything, now they're cleaning your field. They're physically putting that onto your body and wiping you down, and they're calling in, to cleanse that luminous energy field. So you, like, I guess, like any kind of ceremony you're going into, right? Like before you get married in a wedding or a baptism or whatever, you know, you want to be clean as you can before you're going in to receive something so beautiful, something so sacred as these initiation rites.
I see. So what's involved in the initiation itself?
Initiation, they have what's, and in the medicine wheel that I'm teaching, it's called a mesa, which is basically like a shaman's altar or medicine bundle. And through that, how you create that is that in each of these directions, well, let me ask you a question. So they use that, when you receive the rite, you receive it through the shaman's mesa. So in order to get a shaman's mesa, is you have to do your own journey work. And that's part of this medicine wheel training. And again, it's quicker now than it was. You know, some of these, like I know one of the shamans I work with in particular, he's been probably doing it since going on 30 years. And so he's had that medicine bundle for a long time. But you work each direction with three stones. And you work with the archetypes of each direction. So in their tradition, in the south is the serpent, right? The serpent is there for a quick transformation, you know, shedding your old stories in that direction, like a serpent sheds its skin, you know, all at once, mm-hmm. not just dragging right. on these old stories, okay? Then in the west you have the jaguar, which is breaking free of fear, karmic and genetic coding. In the north you have hummingbird, which is the epic journeyer, which is answering the call of spirit, you know, saying yes to life, if you will, and their soul retrieval work is done in that direction. And then in the east is the eagle and the condor, and that's the place where we learn to dream our world, to manifest our own world, to dream our world into being. You know, the shamans always speak about, you know, listen, you want to dream your world? Let's do it now. Let's do it tonight. Let's do it right now, tonight, on this radio show. Why wait till the morning? You know, they don't, you know, a lot of times in the West we think, oh, as soon as I get this done, as soon as my kids go off to school, as soon as I get, you know, this out of the way, as soon as I get enough money to do this. And they say, no, that's all just obstacle. That's unnecessary. Let's do it right now. But to do that, you have to also, you know, kind of go through this body of prophecies and processes. So in each direction, you work with three stones and you transform any kind of old wounding, whether it's childhood or whatever it is, excuse me, and turn them into places of power. So now, instead of places that used to, you ever heard that song from Sting? I love that song. I can't remember the name of it, but one of the lines is, you know, the wounds that she gave me are the wounds that will heal me. And I always think that's so beautiful because it's true. Some, you know, we take these wounds and we turn them into places of power that we're sourcing from places that don't serve us anymore. Instead, we're sourcing from, stepping into our power fully. And so you do that. You have three stones in each direction, and then ultimately you get one lineage stone that holds the blood of the lineage. So usually myself or one of the shamans from over the Andes there'll be a dot of blood on that stone, and that goes in your mesa as well. So it's a linear. It's not a hierarchy. That's what I also love about this work is it's linear. So when you do the work, your mesa is connected to my mesa, which is connected to, you know, the same Andean shamans I work with, and everybody's all the same. It's not like, oh, well, you know, this one's been doing it longer, you're higher up, and it's nothing like that. It's all across the board because we're all in the same boat together, right? So, and then it's a matter of skill set, I think, as far as anything, how long you've been practicing, what you've been doing, how often you practice, and how often you get involved. I often share that with people like musicians. So if I'm playing guitar and you're playing guitar and I'm only picking it up once a week and you're playing every day, well, then you're probably going to be more skilled at playing that guitar. So it's the same thing, I think, with any kind of healing work or service work, is that the more you're doing it, the more it's going to, you know, things you're going to recognize or spirit's going to see that I think support you more. That's my personal opinion on that.
Okay. You mentioned something about dreaming. Tell me what your position is, if you don't mind. Tell me what your position is as far as reality is concerned. Not a light question, I know.
Well, if I'm understanding you correctly, well, the shamans speak about dreaming while you're awake. So I'm not saying going to sleep and dreaming, which they don't see any difference between this world and that world. Just like there's
That's
no difference between, yeah, just like there's no difference between this world of form and matter and that world of energy and spirit. Because, and that's a belief system. I know people that don't believe in that, and that's okay. But I know for me, and Mark can attest to that, I'm sure you can as well, and some of your listeners, that, or maybe all your listeners, is that, you know, if you've communed with spirit, or spirit, especially in mediumship, you're getting information that is very accurate, you know, to someone. So, you know, you're not making that up. It's not, you're not pulling that from somebody psychically if somebody's giving you a message. I mean, that was proof to me in mediumship that, hey, yeah, there is life on the other side. And shamans believe everything has energy and spirit. And that's why they honor everything, and that's why they everything they do, they take, you know, great care and great thought into what's going to happen generations to follow. And this is not just Andean medicine people. This is also Native American peoples, you know, where they would make a decision looking at seven generations down the road. And we've kind of gotten away from that. But I believe that we're, you know, kind of coming more around to that, that we're, you know, and the more I believe, excuse me, the more I believe you are doing your work, that karma happens very quickly. And from a medicine perspective, that's what we want. I want to know when I'm out of alignment that I'm getting the answer right away. If I'm doing something that's not in Aini, in right relationship, I don't want to wait a month, 6 months, a year. I want to know right away, and it'll show up in my life right away. Just like when I am in Aini, that's going to show up right away as well.
Okay. So what do you think is the difference, just based on your experience, between the Andean medicine people and the American Indian people?
There's a big difference, I think, there. There's as far as working with the, well, from my experience of working with either one, is that mm-hmm. in the Andeans, they escaped persecution. Okay, they went up to the high altitude, nobody chased them down, nobody worried about it. The Native Americans didn't have that luxury. They were right here, and they got, persecuted. You know, they got, you know, desecrated in their ways. They had to hide their, you know, they had to hide their way. They had to bring back the ghost dance, the, you know, even sun dance and things like that. It was from some strong chiefs, if you will, that kept that alive, you know, and they didn't go through all that. So that alone, I mean, they've been through a lot more, I'd say, than the Andean peoples are. So I find that they're more, they don't hold on to that, you know, they don't hold on to that, or they don't have that to hold on to, I guess, or to deal with, the Andeans, because shamans and medicine peoples, because they kind of come from that more protected, pure place. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does.
But the Native American peoples are beautiful, and the first peoples, and there's some of the old timers that I, again, this is just my experience, that some of them, you know, they don't want to share things, and rightfully so, but then there's also another great group that is sharing that and saying, hey, you know what, it's not about us and them, it's about what's, you know, the best for the earth and to heal the earth and like that. And there's still, this summer we worked with one of the chiefs from the Pine Ridge Reservation, and wow, what a powerful guy he was. And a very, very, very amazing wisdom keeper. And one of his roles also is he's on the Preservation League for the Native American Preservation League. So they go to him when they're building a road. He goes in. He's also a botanist. We did a medicinal plant walk. So he took us through just randomly any field and go, okay, list flowers for this, list flowers for that, and show us what the medicines were for. But there's certain plants that he knows that are rare, And so when they're going to build roads through certain parts of the mountain, he was sharing with me that he goes through and looks at the pathway that they're going to take, and if there's any rare plants, they don't look to move the rare plants, they move the road. And that's the difference, where probably in the Western way we say, okay, we'll just take the plants, dig them up, put them over there. They're like, these were here before, these stay here, these don't get disrupted. You know, you find another way around it. And he's responsible for a lot of, you know, things that to preserve the nature, to preserve the, you know, the ways out there. So it was quite a gift to hear. And a lot of these things, you got to remember, these oral traditions, they don't write things down. They're passed down orally. So they're passed down, you know, again, grandfather, grandson. So he's sharing stories that are go way, way back. And he has a long lineage of some really powerful medicine people. So, and we got to do a Nipi purification lodge right into a sacred site, which is called Bear Butte, which they still do what they call Humbalechila. They do a vision quest up on these mountains in prayer and pray, and people come and make pilgrimages to this mountain. And we were able to do this lodge right at the base of this mountain with him in a traditional way, with him singing old Lakota songs and speaking in Lakota language. And it was just, it was amazing, really fantastic.
That sounds wonderful. So tell me what a wisdom seeker is for our audience.
Say it again.
Tell me what a wisdom keeper is. You've mentioned it in the last explanation. You mentioned the term wisdom keeper. What is a wisdom keeper?
Oh, well, to me, a wisdom keeper is they're not just a medicine person. They're actually someone who's keeping a body of this wisdom. Like I said, it's been passed down for so long. I mean, you know, unfortunately, in both the traditions, you know, not everybody wants to follow it. You know, there's some of these people, like when they pass on, that wisdom is gone. You know, if it's not handed down, like I said, there's not books. They don't write books on it. Even though there's books out there on things, but most of the true medicine people I know, it's just passed down that way. So that's why I say they're keeping this body of wisdom, and just like in this Andes, they're keeping it alive, a body of processes, you know, like the Munaiki, which are these 9 shamanic rites of initiation we're teaching in November. And it's these rites that have been passed down, you know, over time. So to me, this is true wisdom. This is something that's been, you know, held on to for a long time. And some of the old folks that I've spoken to, or I shouldn't say old folks, I should say elders, or these wisdom keepers, that, you know, they shared that, you know, some of the young people, some of them shy away from it. Some are drawn to it. Now, there's a big revitalization in the Lakota language. Now they're keeping alive. A good friend of mine is working. He works with a group to keep this language alive. And, you know, I think that's really important, because once it's gone, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Tell me about animal spirits, if you would. I know it's a bit of a jump, but it's something that I know you must deal with in your training as a shaman and doing shamanic medicine. Tell me what you believe the connection is. Does everyone have a totem? Do we have a connection to animal life, and how is it? Can you tell our audience how that happens or why it happens, and how we can use that information?
Yeah, great question. I'm a big firm believer in animal spirits and power of animals and how they help us and how they bring us signs. I mean, typically I'm always, you know, before a class or a workshop, I'm probably more heightened to be on the lookout to see what shows up, because every animal has a message. The first thing I would share with everybody, the power animal doesn't mean like a jaguar is more powerful than a hummingbird or a butterfly. It means that they all have the same, it's across the board again. It's not like one's higher than the other. What it is their instincts, because a butterfly has different instincts and things to teach you than a jaguar does. Okay. So with that said, that medicine they bring forth, they're coming forth to reset some instincts that you've lost or you've forgotten or you maybe never had, that they're coming to set these instincts into you to help you with a situation. I believe power animals can come in and out of our lives. I do believe that we have them, whether you said totem or power animals, that you have one constantly or two consistently throughout your life, and then other ones kind of come in and out to help you with a certain situation. So to give you an example, one day I was walking around, I was dealing with something, and I was walking around trying to figure it out, and then, of course, it hit me, okay, I should know better, you know, because you've got to always take it up to the next level. And Albert Einstein says you can't solve a problem at the level it was created, right? So if you created it in your mind and you're trying to struggle with it in your mind, you could do it that way, but it's a lot quicker if you take that level of the soul or the level of spirit. So I gave it up and said, okay, spirit, I'm working with this. You know, give me a sign. I need some help here. I need some guidance here. And I swear to you, not within 30 seconds, in flew a falcon. Now, I see hawks sometimes. Not too many falcons in my neighborhood, but I flew a falcon, and I live in a kind of a suburban, I'm not out in the country or anything, I live in a suburban, you know, neighbors on top of neighbors area, and this falcon flew up on top of a telephone pole, and I just stared at him, and we started to have a dialogue, and that might sound, you know, totally rational to some and crazy to others, but I had this total dialogue with this falcon for a while, and of course, one of the main things I'm always about is giving thanks, honoring, giving thanks, you know, just for showing up. And some things came in real clearly, and then after that I even went to read on a little more, and it was exactly the information and the guidance and what I needed at that time. And one of the things that Falcon teaches is the Falcon knows when to go in to strike, when to go in. And this is what I was dealing with. I was trying to deal with a situation about, you know, should I act now or should I act tomorrow or next week? And the falcon medicine kind of brought it into perspective for me. So that's one, you know, one kind of an example. But to me, I'm constantly looking at that, you know.
Thank you. So it's always great to have both of you on the radio show and, of course, Pam. Terry, in closing, about 1 minute, can you kind of tell us what is the, like, a really important message you'd like to share with all the listeners?
I would say that they all, you know, that to know that you make a difference out there, to know, you know, that, you know, there's no accidents. God's created everyone, and you know, God loves variety. We're all different, and that, you know, you can make a difference. And sometimes I know for people who are looking to make a giant change, sometimes it's just a small step and go with that and know that, you know, shine your light. You know, shine your light in the world and make a difference. Even if it's just smiling, helping someone, little things go a long way. So,
excellent.
And that we're here for anybody. If they ever have any questions or want to know anything, we're all about being a service, and we're very grateful. I'm grateful to you and Pam for what you're doing. I want to thank you for having me on.
Oh, and we're always great to have you on, and thank you. Go ahead and give out your website again, Terry.
It's carriestokes.com, CareyStokes, carriestokes.com. And we got a lot of good things coming up for the fall.
All right. Thank you, everybody. We're kind of breaking up there now. Thanks for everybody, and have a good night.
Thanks, Carrie. Good night.
Thank you, guys. Big blessings.
Thank you.